Located in sub-Saharan Africa and bordering on 8 other countries, the landlocked Zambia has been independent since 1964. However, long before that, when the British colony of Northern Rhodesia still existed, numerous Irish people, primarily those that were there through the missionaries, were beginning to leave an impact on the country. This series from Limerick to Lusaka looks at the various links that exist between Ireland and Zambia over 40 years after independence and asks if those links are as strong as ever and just how beneficial they are for both countries. In this, our first programme, we look at education with specific emphasis on the growing relationship between Marymount College Limerick and the African country. We'll hear from students and staff of the college who have first-hand experience of Zambian education, and later on in the programme we will be visiting the town of Choma in Zambia to examine the impact the Irish College has had on their various educational establishments. Mary Immaculate's links with Zambia initially came through the AEE, Alternative Education Experience Programme for Primary School Teaching Students. President of the college, Pádraig Creamann, tells how Irish students began travelling from the college in the mid-90s.
We were doing this for a number of years with students gone as far as Finland. Then they began to raise questions, could we go to North America? And basically we said, if you have a point of contact and can get yourself into a school setting, all we want back is a report describing what you did. And we'll try to authenticate it by maybe ringing the people there and so on. So this has to be agreed in advance before you ever go. And then one day, a student who had an aunt, she was a student actually from County Waterford, she had an aunt who was a nun in Zambia. And she came to me and said, is it possible to go to Africa? At that time, I was doing a lot of work in Tanzania, all right? So I said, absolutely, I can help you find a place if you want to go to Tanzania. And she said, no, I don't need to because I already have a contact in Zambia. So our first student went to Zambia, I think in 1994. And then in the following year, we sent other students to Africa. Initially, I think to Tanzania, after that to South Africa, but continued the link with Zambia. In the early years, a small number of students were going to Africa. I'm talking about maybe 3 or 4 students at the most in any one year. And then when I became head of education, we appointed a lecturer in my place called Paddy Fulham.
For Dr. Paddy Fulham, now retired from the college, Africa has been a major part of most of his life.
I went to Africa in 1966, and to use that famous quote, I went out there to teach, but glad to say I came back educated, or at least a little bit better educated than when I went out. Because when you're young and arrogant, you think that you have an awful lot to give to the entire world, including the continent of Africa. But I wasn't long there. I went to Kenya, and I wasn't there long when actually I found out how much I had to learn. I suppose it was also the beginning of a love affair with Africa that has continued to last up to the present day. Perhaps one of the first lessons that I learned was just how important a teacher is in a classroom, because the classrooms were under-resourced, they were overcrowded, the teacher's pay was pretty miserable, morale could sometimes be low, and yet at the same time, despite all of these challenges, children were getting a quality education, and that impressed me. So I got married in 1966, so our honeymoon started in the bush in Africa. Initially we went out for 2 years, but that became 8. And then when we came home, I suppose I knew that someday I'd return. I heard of the module here called Alternative Educational Experience, and talking both formally and informally with students, I said, look, if you want something alternative, you're not going to find better than Africa. And the seed must have fallen on fertile ground, because a number of students came to me that said they'd love to do their AEE in Africa. And so in 1998, the first group of 6 went to South Africa and taught in Johannesburg and in Pretoria. And of course, we had to go down to Cape Town to see Robben Island, where Mandela was imprisoned and so on. And when they came back with their stories of Africa, it just went through the college like wildfire. And suddenly my office became a very popular place. A student saying, Paddy, can you get us to Africa? And I think it was the year probably after that, 1999, we had students in Ethiopia, Kenya, Zambia, the Gambia, and I think some went to Uganda. But that wasn't going to last, because obviously there had to be some streamlining done. And it was decided, and I think wisely so, that we'd focus on two countries. And so we decided we'd focus on Zambia, quite a large country in Southeast Africa, and in the Gambia, which is a tiny country, basically two banks of a river, with now two sets of traffic lights, in West Africa. And since then, students have been going to both of these countries.
One such student was Jane Conway, now a qualified and practicing teacher for a few years. Jane travelled to Zambia in January 2005 and recalls the process she went through to get selected.
I was a mature student and I really felt, you know, before I had been to college, you know, I had worked in really kind of pointless jobs, and I had never done the year in Australia or gone to America. I hadn't done a lot of travelling, and it was always something that was in the back of my head, but I felt that I couldn't do it until I had a degree or something more concrete under my belt. And when this opportunity arose, I kind of said, you know, I'm going to go for this. And I wrote in the email that, you know, that I have wasted an awful lot of my life and I want to do something, you know, something good, and, you know, I want to maybe appreciate what I have more. And especially when I was going into teaching, I wanted to be able to tell children about it and make children more aware of the third world and of developmental education issues. And I felt that I couldn't really do that unless I had a small bit of hands-on experience. There was one other mature student, Katrina Roach, and she got it as well, and she went with me. And there was, among the other students, there was definitely interest, but I think a lot of the worry was how they were going to afford it, how they were going to fundraise, how would they pay for the flights, because you do obviously get the funds yourself. So that was something that stopped a lot of the people applying for it, because an awful lot of them didn't get grants and things like that. So that was a big issue with people making the final decision. I took a loan out of the bank for the flight, and I was doing, I was working part-time doing grinds and working on the ABA programme with the different children. So I had a bit of money saved up myself. And for the fundraising, now you weren't obliged to do fundraising by any means, but you did kind of want to do it, and you knew that other people would be doing it and bringing over supplies and bits and pieces. So we put on a gig in the high school in Limerick, and about four or five Limerick bands played, and we charged money at the door, and we had raffles, and it was a huge response. It was a brilliant night, absolutely brilliant. And I think we made nearly €2,000, which was, we were just absolutely thrilled with, like, and we brought that with us, and it made a huge difference, I think, over there. You know, it bought supplies, and it sent two boys to secondary school that wouldn't have been able to afford to go, and it bought them uniforms and books, and there was a bit left over that could pay for maybe the following years. So it really went to a huge use, even though €2,000 isn't that much to us and to the people that were there. It made a huge difference over there.
Over a short number of years, we had increased our input into Africa from one student to something like 30 students in a very short amount of time. And it has continued since that time, the placement of students in Africa. You can go with the organised groups, or you can go, if you have your own contacts, you can go otherwise. And that's why, you know, it's something that's quite unique. It's something that doesn't happen in other institutions, and certainly doesn't happen at that scale and then in that very organised way. What I particularly like about it is I think this activity is rooted in the mission statement of the college and in what the college should be about.
We did it at a time when Ireland was changing enormously, when we were moving from being quite a homogenous grouping of white Irish people into a much more multi-ethnic society. And so for people to go to Africa and then to be able to come back and to use that experience in a new multi-ethnic Ireland, I think that was tremendous. So the timing, I think, was just about perfect.
It was clear the talk of Zambia was not just having an impression on the students, but also the staff of the college.
Word began to spread. I mean, when the students came back with their African hairdos, and a little bit more tanned than when they went out, and this was in the winter time, you see. So there was a kind of an appeal to the whole business, and there is still Africa, despite the fact that, you know, you're there overnight. It still has an exotic ring to it. I suppose more importantly, there was an awareness that this was something important that was happening. You know, this was changing students. I mean, I saw it myself. These people changed in front of my eyes. Like when they went out there and they saw poverty on a scale that they wouldn't have seen before, when they saw classrooms overcrowded and under-resourced and so on, and they began to realise how fortunate we are here. And this began to spread right throughout the college. So we decided that we'd enlarge this whole conceptualization of developing a link between this college and with our two African countries. And we also decided that it should be a cross-college link, that it's not just confined to academic staff, but that we would have maintenance staff, kitchen staff, personnel, library, you name it. And I thought that was quite exciting, and that was quite new. And it was great to go with people that, if you like, you wouldn't have been dealing with in normal everyday life here in the college. And we got to know each other, I think, extremely well on the study visits. And more importantly, we began to set up the links that are now much more formalised.
It actually came out of an incidental comment of some staff member who said to me one day, well, it's all very well sending the students to Africa, but when they come back and start all this talk about Africa, those of us who haven't been to Africa don't really know very much about it. Isn't it time that you did something to make sure that staff, other than the students, that the staff themselves have a greater knowledge and awareness of Africa? We took that as a challenge, and we discussed over quite a long time with the Developing Links Group how this might be done. The college agreed to put in a certain percentage of the cost on the condition that people were also carrying some of the cost themselves. And then we graded it, actually, so we give greater support to those who were in the lowest earnings. And ultimately, two groups went out to Africa. One group went to Gambia, and the other group went to Zambia. There were about 10 people, 9 or 10 people in each of the groups. Now, it's just so happened I was doing some work in Ethiopia at the time when the group arrived in Zambia, and I went down and joined them for a part of the trip. But on that trip, we had some academics. We had people from the radio station, from catering, from cleaning, from the library, from every walk of life in the college. And that was, I think, one of the very enriching things about it, that this wasn't some kind of elitist thing. I mean, somebody had said to me, the academics get a lot of opportunities to travel anyway, because it's in the nature, you're going to conferences and so on. And indeed, you're very likely to be asked to do some work in Africa at some stage in an academic career. But other people don't have as many opportunities. And we found it was one of the particularly enriching things that we took a sort of community group, in a sense. We took a whole sector of the college community to Africa. I think that was very enriching and has been very beneficial in lots of different ways, even since they came back.
I suppose when I really, really became familiar with it was when I went to the Africa Night in second year, and I had heard of a few friends of mine who had been in third year who had been preparing to go on AEE, and they were all doing different things, whether it was going to a special needs school or a prison or Scotland, England, Africa then, I suppose, was something that I had heard. And as soon as I heard about it, I was very, very interested.
This year, Maurice O'Hara was amongst the final year students to travel to Zambia.
I didn't really believe I could go through with it until the tickets were actually booked. So it was the prospect of going out there was very, very exciting. I suppose I was very lucky in that one of my housemates knew the priest that is living in Zambia that would be in close contact with the college, and he would be a close family friend. And luckily enough, she had him emailed very, very early in the year saying that 7 of us were interested and would it be possible for us to go out. And he was delighted with that, and he was very, very helpful, and he said it would be great if we did go out. So she contacted Siobhan Hurley then, and Siobhan Hurley confirmed it then for us, so that was great. We were delighted that we had the opportunity to go. We're very lucky. As well, the fact that Father Kelly lived out in Zambia and we had him as a contact, we had him as a mentor. Sarika, the girl in our group, knew him very, very well. And that was a security for us that we were actually going out to someone that we knew that was Irish as well. So, you know, he would be able to empathise with us and where we were coming from, because we were going out into an unknown country as well, and that he'd be able to guide us and stuff. And he had experience as well in having other groups out in Zambia. I think that was a big, big part of it. And just in general, the experiences that the people who had travelled to Zambia had, it just really, really appealed to us.
We arrived and we got off the airplane, we walked straight onto the runway, and it was the heat, you know, it was that heat that you can see it rising off the runway, just real stagnant heat. And the airport, you know, it was a capital city and the, you know, top one in the country, like, but it was still, you know, Shannon was a million times better than it. And we came in, and straight away you go in and there's immigration, and there was a huge queue. But because we're Irish, you get to skip that queue and go in with the Zambians. I think it's something to do with missionary work. I'm not 100% sure. So we were made very welcome straight away. They really did welcome us. And there was Paddy Fulham had arranged someone to collect us, and they were there straight away. So we just got the bags and set it off on our 7-hour bus journey down to Choma on a little minibus. So that was a little bit squashed and cramped and hot, but it was very exciting at the same time. It really was. And you could see a bit of the capital city, and you got to see the countryside, and you know, it really was fantastic to be able to see it. It definitely wasn't exactly as I had imagined. It was a lot greener than I had thought at first. It definitely was. I suppose it was just after the rainy season, so the land was pretty fertile, etc. But it was a very green country. The roads were very basic, dusty, what you'd imagine, you know, lots of people at the side of the road selling bits and pieces. And it was definitely, you know, a much underdeveloped country than we are, definitely. You know, you could tell straight away that you weren't in a rich country. We arrived at the weekend, and it was that Monday, we were picked up from our hotel. Well, I suppose I wouldn't really call it a hotel. It was the Riverside Lodge. It was, you know, just a few rooms, and they provided us with meals, and it was lovely, very clean and very nice. They were very kind to us there, and we were brought straight away. We were picked up in a pickup truck, and we all jumped into the back of it, and we drove around to the different schools so that we'd become familiar with the schools that we were going to be in. And we decided that we didn't want to be based just in one school, that we'd be based, I think it was four schools. So we visited all the four schools, and we were brought around them and introduced to the headmaster. And we just found our bearings a bit on the first couple of days before we were actually dropped off at a different school every morning with a partner.
We went into school every morning, and school begins at 7:30 in the morning, and it goes on then till 12:30. Some teachers have to work from 7:30 to 5 p.m. in the day with little or no break, because some schools aren't big enough to facilitate the juniors and the seniors. So they have to take the juniors in the morning and the seniors in the second half of the day. So that they had to work very, very hard. But we just, the most we had to work was from 7:30 to 12:30 in the day. Then we would go and we would get some lunch, and typically then we would go and we would visit an orphanage. Another day we went to a parent teacher meeting. A school asked us to visit a parent teacher meeting and just be there. We went to a curriculum talk where we discussed our curriculum and the Zambian curriculum with the teachers and compared and contrasted. And we went to a street kids centre where basically children that were off the street were brought into the centre, looked after, and it was for boys. And I remember when we walked in initially, there was a lot of boys there, and we were kind of intimidated because we didn't know what way they would respond to us. But they were, you know, they were between 13 and 18 years old, and they were absolutely lovely. So they were, but the main thing that struck me was their talent. Those people can dance and they can sing, and I was just saying it was such a shame to see such talented people, and if they were over here, you know, the potential that they could reach would be so high, you know, even with a little bit of maybe training or whatever. But it's sad, but it's good as well to see that they have that in their lives, and that gives them happiness and hope and stuff. Other evenings then we went to orphanages, we went to the street kids, we visited an AIDS hospice, and that was extremely sad. So it was a few of these people that had AIDS, you wouldn't actually think that they had the disease either, because of their outlook, and it was so positive again. So that was nice to see, but it was heartbreaking all the same.
It just really, it made me feel, you know, see how we take things for granted here and how selfish we are really about the most basic things, and how we just take, you know, we think we have a right to so much. They should have too. I mean, everyone has a right to education, but they don't have that at all over there, and they wanted it so much. And I just felt that, you know, if people could see what they had to go through to get an education, and if children could see in Ireland how lucky they were to have it in the first place, you know, that they might appreciate it just a little bit more. I mean, just a tiny bit would make a huge difference, I think.
They went out to teach, mm-hmm. and to experience firsthand and hands-on what teaching and learning is like in a developing country, right? But I think it was much more comprehensive than that. They also immersed themselves in the culture of the country. Not just teaching in schools, we visited hospitals, We visited the cultural centres. We visited museums. We saw traditional dancers. We visited teachers' homes. They came to visit us and where we stayed. So there was a constant mingling going on, and they began to see, I suppose, firsthand the challenges that people face on an everyday basis. For instance, they saw the unemployment. You know, there's the level of unemployment, I mean, it's just huge in Zambia. It's massive. And I suppose one of the saddest and yet one of the most enjoyable days that they have is when they visit the hospice on the day that the children who unfortunately have HIV/AIDS, they come in for their treatment. And we set up a football match on that day between the students and the kids who come in and the nuns who are there. They are everybody, and the nurses there. Everybody has to take part in this football match. And I'm the referee. And the deal before the match is that if it's a draw, they get to keep the footballs and everything else. So I referee it in a way that it ends as a draw. There is a penalty shootout and the goalkeeper is advised that the number of goals must be even at the end of this match. And so there's a celebration afterwards and the kids are so delighted with their new footballs. I suppose it's a wonderful thing to see kids who, you know, their young lives blighted by this dreadful disease, and yet here they are running around the soccer field and laughing and shouting and joking, and our students joining in. And then when we drive away, I suppose there's the sadness that these people's lives may be cut very short. So when you experience things like this, it changes you. Mm. It changes your perspective forever. You cannot come back the same person. You cannot, because you're touched by this.
You have to see these teachers and the amount of work that they do, and they're getting little or no pay at times, and they're getting little or no support, and a lot of them don't have training, and they just have such patience. They have classroom sizes of 60, 70 children in a class. However, what I would say about Ireland is we do have a government behind us. We have lots of money in the Department of Education, and especially when there is the possibility of our classroom sizes increasing. I mean, we're one of the richest countries in the world. You know, it should be that the classroom sizes are increasing, I think, in Ireland when the money is there. And I can see the Irish teacher's perspective, but at the same time, it is also important to see these people out in Africa teach as well, because they just, it would be impossible to teach like that over here, I think. I don't think I'd be able to do it personally.
We would use drama an awful lot these days, you know, when we're teaching, and art, and, you know, different methods that they definitely would think as a waste of time. You know, really, they're there to teach you, listen to them, you repeat everything they say and you learn it, and that's it. There isn't any time for, you know, classroom discussion or brainstorming or any of those things that we take for granted and we do every day, you know.
Choma is a market town in the southern province of Zambia, and a lot of passing traffic comes through, as it is on the main road from Lusaka, the capital, to Livingstone, the tourism mecca of Zambia. I travelled from Lusaka to Choma on bus, a journey of about 4 hours, and visited some of the places visited by Irish trainee teachers. Our first port of call was Faithhood Christian School, a fee-paying school.
Moke is my surname, and Kelvin is my first name. As at now, I'm in the capacity of a deputy head teacher at Faithhood Christian School, as well as a class teacher for grade 4B, because we have got two streams of the grade 4s. So I'm handling the grade 4B class. I personally like interactions, and I'm one person who is always open-minded and ready to learn from others, share experiences from others, because I know no man is an island. So because no man is an island, we need to share knowledge. And immediately I heard that these people are coming, well, I was happy and ready to expect them to learn more things and share things with them. Basically, the main thing I learned was on the methodology. Especially, that's the major thing I would do, I would confess. The methodology on how to teach literacy. That's reading and writing. The way they handled my class, it's wonderful. And that's the method which I've maintained up to now, the method I'm using to teach literacy in my class. And from the results, it's perfect.
My name is Dorcas Lipadile. I'm the head teacher of this school. It's called Faithhood Christian School, and it's been in operation for the past 13 years. We offer primary school education on the Zambia-based course, and we also cater for the nursery section, ages 2.5 to 5 years. We call it the nursery section. Our primary school is from grade 1 to grade 7. In all, we have 13 classes. We have 372 pupils, okay, inclusive of the nursery section. We got the information a month before they came, and we didn't have much to prepare because we were told they wanted to come and observe and see what goes on in the Zambian schools. The children were very happy. They thought it was great, a change from their usual teachers and new things, a new teacher, and almost it was just great for the kids. They are very excited. They are happy to have them around.
Generally, children are unique type of people. They are free-minded, they are open-minded. Because of that, they interact with anyone whom they found interesting. So anyone who brings interesting things to them. And immediately when the friends from Ireland, when they came, it was very interesting for our children. It was a great experience. They taught the children things about the island, what is done there, the approach to teaching and many other aspects. And for them, because they also wanted to have an experience of what goes on here, they also took part, right, to try to experiment, to try to find out how the teaching here is done. They did also sit to observe first, especially when it was time for them to learn what is done in Zambia.
Next up, it was to another local primary school where we met the head teacher, Ethel.
This school started in 1998. This is the 10th year. Yeah, we have preschool, that is a baby class, middle class, and the reception. Then for primary section, we have grade 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Then what we offer here, we have subjects like English, mathematics, social studies, science, special paper 1 is compulsory. Then the basic subject is Tonga. We also teach Tonga starting from pre-grade up to grade 7. Then from what we learned from those people who came, the teachers who came from Ireland, actually those people, they taught us a lot of things. Where teaching is concerned, those people were very stable, confident, and they knew what they were doing. Then the other thing, they taught our pupils a lot of songs. We really liked the songs. Not only that, they really performed some sort of dance. Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Excellent.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that very much. Then we also taught them some other things like the language itself, because here most of the pupils, you find that, okay, English is compulsory for all the pupils, but according to us Zambians, there are different languages, different tribes. We have Tonga, Nyanja, Bemba, and Ila. But here in Choma, the basic subject is Tonga. So we taught them Tonga. They were asking us how we greet people in Chitonga. Like in English, we say good morning. Then in Tonga, we say mabugawuti. So they liked that. They really enjoyed it. Now, actually, the methods of teaching that we have what is known as a child-centered and teacher-centered learning. When we talk of child-centered learning, it's a teaching whereby a child is sitting in class listening to what the teacher is trying to teach. The teacher will be in front explaining some other things to the children. Then the children will be asking questions at the end of the lesson. That is child-centered. But if the child didn't understand whatever has been explained, that child has the right to ask the teacher. Then a teacher-centered learning is a situation whereby the teacher will just be in front. He or she will write a question on the board. Then pupils will explain what they understand from the given question. Then the teacher will jot down the points. Those points will be from the pupils. That is teacher-centered learning. Then the learning from the teaching which we have here in Zambia, actually the difference is minimal from those people from Ireland. It's minimal in a sense that those people from Ireland, basically their teaching was based on a teacher-centered, whereby they will write a question, then they will expect pupils to give out some points. But as Zambians, we use both child-centered and teacher-centered. We really need them. They are most welcome because we need the different teaching methods from those same people. Maybe we can also learn some other few things from them.
The next school on the list was St. Malumba School, where I met John. John outlined how different a school it was to others and one that has strong links to the Irish missionaries.
I'm the acting deputy head at the moment. I came in St. Malumba in 1993, having been posted to teach the visually impaired children. When I came, I found Sister Philippa O'Sullivan, Irish nun, who was by then the headmistress of St. Malumba School. I worked with her up to 1996, when she handed the school to a Zambian, who became the first headmistress of St. Malumba. I worked with Madam Nyambe for a period of 3 years, then I left to work for the Minister of Education at the district to do guidance and counseling activities in the district. Then in just this year, January, I was called to act as deputy head for the school. Hence, up to now, I'm the acting deputy head. I am a specialist teacher. I teach the visually impaired. I would say that St. Malumba School has an enrollment of 210 pupils. We in the categories of the visually impaired, the hearing impaired, and the intellectually challenged. At the moment, this term, so far we have almost 170 children who have reported. They are still reporting since we just opened the school. So far, so good. We are doing fine. Children are healthy, happy. Right now, the classes are going on well. Before 1985, St. Malumba was none in existence. Not until when Sister Philippa O'Sullivan took the initiative, after she saw that there are a number of mentally challenged children in the villages who were just left in the cold, no education. So she thought of starting a school. Then in 1985, with her dream, she asked the Bishop of Mons, the great James Cowboy by then, to maybe help in funding for the school. But unfortunately, the bishop had no money to sort of start that dream of Sister Philippa. But thanks to God, when Sister Philippa wrote to the Irish government quickly responded and donated some money where Sister Philippa started a few buildings where the classes began. So this was sometime in 1985. We have built a number of structures because the number kept on increasing. It all started with a mentally challenged, then came the hearing impaired. From the hearing impaired, we had the visually impaired. All are now in this school. Each time they came, they have had an impact on us. We learned one or two things, and them also learned one or two things from us. And this interaction, I think, should continue. We would love to continue. If possible, even ourselves, we come and see what is happening in Ireland. The Irish also come to us so that we are becoming like one family, whereby each family member knows what is happening in the other family group.
I must say here that the students have been absolutely fantastic in fundraising. One of the places in Zambia where they teach, it's a community school. A community school simply means that the parents have to provide the money to keep the school going while the government will pay the teachers. And we have a school in Choma called Kalundu Camarilla, which is mostly for street children and orphans. And one of the sights that saddened our students deeply was that while there were some kids who were able to get into the school and pay the very small fees, which, mind you, small for us, but sacrifice for them, there were kids still on the outside looking in at the playground and looking in through the windows at those inside. So we began to do fundraising. And with the students' help and with help from my family, my friends and so on, people in Newcastle West were very generous also. We have now, and also people in Clare, people that I never expected that would come to the fore. And we are now building two extra classrooms in Kalundu Camarilla. I hope by now they should be near completion. And it's the students who have been responsible for that. One particular student that I won't name because it might embarrass the student actually brought me in a very substantial amount of money that she had been given for her 21st birthday party. And I tried to dissuade her because I said, look, you're a young person.
Yeah.
You know, there are demands on you at the moment. I'm sure you find lots of ways that you could spend this. And the student said, no, I want this to go to Kalundu Camarilla. So if you like, that, I think that encapsulates the influence that this experience has on students. It made me feel very humble because the amount that she was given, like relative to what people like us here are earning. I mean, we were earning good money here. We have our own homes. We have cars. We have most of the things we want. This person was starting out in life. And for this person to make such a personal commitment, yeah, it was humbling. And I hope that she's going to be very fortunate as a result.
My name is Faustina Kalema. I'm the headmistress for Kalundu Camarilla Community School. It is a school that caters for the vulnerable children and the orphans. It was founded in the year 2002 with only 15 pupils. Currently, the school has grown to 303 pupils. The school was founded by the community under a shelter in the compound. It was later looked into by Sister Philippa, an Irish sister, who saw that there was need for the orphans and vulnerable children to have shelter. In the year 2003, he bought the building here in Zambia compound at 29 million. This building used to be a tavern. It was later renovated and the desks were brought and the place was conducive for learning. The first time we came in contact with Paddy Fulham from Mary Immaculate College was in 2002. He came with the girls. Here they came with the assistance in forms of pens, books, balls. In general, all sports kit was brought. They came to visit us and later left these things for our learning to be conducive. They assisted us in teaching. They employed the methods of teaching from Mary Immaculate. We shared experiences and the pupils were motivated because of the exchange visit that we had. They equally brought learning and teaching materials for the teachers, which was a great help. In that building, when Paddy Fulham started coming to Zambia, we had no such a building. We started through his assistance with the teachers from Mary Immaculate College. We dug the foundation the first year they came. The following year, they funded us with cement and bricks. It progressed up to the last year that they came here. They brought us more funding that assisted us in buying building materials. This time we have roofing, window frames, and the planks in readiness for the class to be completed.
Okay. And where does the rest of the funding then come from?
The other funding is coming from the community, and a bit of it is coming from the Ministry of Education. Okay, it used to come from the Ministry of Education, but this time their funding has come to an end, so it is now up to the parents to source for those funds to complete the classroom block. It has been a big challenge. Parents are not finding it very easy, as funding is not easy to come by the parents in the community, as most of the parents in the community are not in employment, but they have to look around. Though it is not very easy for them to come by funds in order for us to complete the building.
Okay.
But they are trying. By September, we have to complete it. First week of September, we are assuring that it will be through. The funds from Ireland has been of great help to us. We didn't have enough space, but through their assistance, we have built a 1x3 classroom block that will enable us enroll more pupils. Space has not been enough, but they've helped us to bring about space in the school. When we complete the classroom block, we'll be able to enroll more pupils. This has been of great help.
At the Education Ministry, I found out about other schools benefiting from current and past students of Mary Immaculate.
I am Saint Kanyite. I am planning officer for Choma District Education Board. My core responsibility is looking at projects and programs as well as budgeting for district requirements. Well, we have received about 4 million in Zambian kwacha from ex-students of Mary Immaculate Training College towards the construction of a 1x3 classroom block at Arise Community School. At the moment, that school is, we have about 7 grades, which is about 208 pupils. Who are currently using a church building. They have no permanent structure. Most of these children are coming from a shanty compound, and most of them are orphans and they are vulnerable children. They have failed to get places in regular schools, so they are attending that community school, which is using a church building at the moment.
And how difficult then is it for the teachers that have all these students in such a small space?
It's very difficult. They are trying to the multi-grade system, where you teach different grades using one classroom. But it's difficult because those teachers are not trained in multi-grade teaching. So they are simply trying, and they, we don't expect very good results from people that are not trained in multi-grade teaching. From the funding we got, you know, the four million kwacha that we got, we have so far started the building. We have done the excavation, and the footing has been done. So what is remaining now is to be to mold more blocks so that we start building. So we still have to build up to, well, we still require funds to build up to roof level. And we are trying to also get assistance, even not only from the Irish former students of Mary Immaculate Training College, but we are trying also to ask from the government so that we build a bigger classroom, a classroom block. Yes.
And would you like to start to see continued support from Mary Immaculate College as well?
Yes, yes, we do appreciate, because apart from the classroom block, we still need another 1x2 classroom block that so that we can have 5 classrooms at that particular school. And later we also need to build staff houses.
Another link we found in Choma to Mary Immaculate College was Father Nicky Manza at Mukasa Minor Seminary.
In Mukasa, I'm the rector, okay, or not say the headmaster. This school was established in 1966 by late Bishop James Cowboy, and he was Irish. So when he came into Zambia, the first thing as bishop of the diocese, what he thought was to have a place where young people would be taught, and those who are interested in becoming priests would come from a minor seminary, go into a major seminary. Okay, so that basically from 1966, that's when the school was established, and it has been under the Jesuits for the last 41 years. It's only last year that the Diocese of Monze took over from the Jesuits, and one of the local priests sent to work here in this school. Yeah, I came here, and it was in 1984. That's when I came here. And at that time, my headmaster was Father Jerry O'Connell, and he's the man I took over from in the last 1 year. He was working with me and just completed last term. That was in April. That's when he left. So I was here in grade 8 to 12, then went into the major seminary, and then I was ordained in 1997, then worked in the parish, then came back to Mukasa and took over as headmaster. In Limerick, I was doing my MA in theology. I found it quite interesting. First, I think I enjoy the challenge, you know, to be challenged. And when I went to study in Limerick, I found, you know, yeah, they push you to study, to work, you know, do the work, you know. And I found that to be quite interesting, and the experience was quite enriching. The visits have been quite beneficial, you know, to the community here. Yeah, because every time they came out, they interacted quite well with the local community, and assisted the community in many ways, in just doing the manual work, in teaching, you know. So they did a lot in that. And at the same time, I would say the times we met just to share the experiences, you know, with them, how they were finding, you know, their experience here in Zambia, working with different people here. It was, I would say it was beneficial so to their side, just to see the system of education that is here, you know, the kind of schools that are here. And I think also learning, you know, opening up to a different culture.
New developments such as the Zambia-Ireland Teacher Partnership are solidifying the educational links between Ireland and Zambia.
The Zambia-Ireland Teaching Partnership is only one of at least three major projects that we're involved in at the minute. It's a very significant one because it's one that brings together all of the colleges of teacher education at the primary level. Now, as you know, two of those colleges are quite large colleges, ourselves and St. Pat's and Drumcondra, and three of them are fairly small. There's Frebel in Sion Hill, there's Marino College on the north side of Dublin, and then there's the Church of Ireland College in Rathmines. They're much smaller in terms of the numbers of students that they have. But the five colleges are collaborating together, which means that in engaging with our counterparts in Zambia, all right, we are more likely to be able to generate the critical mass for us to make a difference. Now, we're trying to keep that project very focused, that it's about upgrading the skills of teacher educators. And we're committed, insofar as we can, to support our counterparts in Zambia as they address very considerable challenges. Challenges that in many ways we understand. Because, you know, some of us, like myself, are old enough to remember an Ireland which was a much poorer country. You know, when I was very, very young, and when I went to stay with my grandparents, they didn't have electricity. They didn't have running water. They didn't have indoor toilets. And that was widespread in Ireland of the late 50s. So when I visit someplace in Africa, I see many, many villages, homes that remind me of Ireland as it was up to the end of the 50s. The kind of wealth that I suppose a younger generation is used to now is something very, very new. And we want to be part of a movement, in a sense, that helps to ensure that Africa shares in the greater global wealth that there is now and shouldn't continue to be exploited for the great wealth that it actually has.
It's amazing what can be done with a good teacher, a small exercise copy and a pencil. It really is. It's phenomenal what can be achieved. And I think this is one of the very valuable lessons that our students learn when they go out to Africa. Just how important a teacher is in the classroom. There is no doubt the teacher is the most important resource. You can have all the technology, You can have the interactive whiteboard. You can have the computer. Now, these are all good. These are all very good. And I, of course, I would like to see more of them in Africa. But at the end of the day, it's the teacher that counts.
I know that many people get confused, and some people think we're trying to do something in Africa for Africans. In fact, we're trying to build partnerships and friendships with people in Africa. But beyond that, we don't fancy that we're doing anything terribly significant there. What's really, really significant is what we're learning from this partnership and what we're bringing back from Africa in terms of experience and learning. I think when our students subsequently go into schools here, they bring this wealth of experience. And it also changes their mindset, because I think once you've been to Africa, you're more open to taking an interest in Africa, taking an interest in issues related to Africa. So when you see coverage on television of international figures going to Africa, when you see coverage of issues, whether it's about the exploitation of Africa, whether it's historical or current, I think you're more likely to be interested. And that means that when you yourself become a teacher in an Irish primary school, you're not just informed by the experience that you had when you were in Africa, you're also informed by the fact that you've probably continued learning, you've continued taking an interest, and you may well indeed have maintained some of the context that you made when you were out there. And all of that, I think, will be enormously enriching for your teaching in the classroom.
First of all, when we were out there, we got a lot of resources and things like that that we plan to use in the classroom. And I will definitely speak about Africa, my experiences in Africa. I will show them. I have videos of some of the children singing and things like that, and I have plenty of resources. I think it is very important, seeing as there are so many multicultural people coming into our country at the moment and coming into our class. I think it's an issue that all children should be educated about to prevent racism in the future and to encourage broadening their knowledge on this topic. I also think it's very, very tough to teach passionately about something like Zambia, for example, unless you have actually attended or gone to a country like this. Teaching has to be passionate. It's like, you know, children's experiences. You need to make, you know, their learning relative to them. It's like teacher's experience. I need to make my teaching relevant to me, or else the chance of me teaching it with passion is limited, do you know? So I definitely will. And I think that my experiences that I had in Zambia will help me to do that effectively.
I always had an interest, but I definitely do have more of an interest now. And I really would. I know that Mary Ive set up a fantastic MED programme with the development education. I would hope to do that in time, hopefully. But I think that it's definitely something that's becoming more prominent in the syllabus. And I think there's so much more resources in Irish Aid, or a great organisation altogether for providing resources from classrooms. And there's so much out there. And I think we need to make, you know, as much use of it as we can, you know, because we can bring it into so many curricular areas. And the children do genuinely, absolutely love it. And I'm going to Uganda in July for 5 weeks to teach in other schools over there, and to teach teachers as well, and to compare notes and things like that. So I'm really looking forward to that, and the children are definitely as excited as I am, and they're helping me to raise money, and you know, they want to know so much about it, and they can't wait for me to come back and tell them all about it. And I think it's a big thing that they know that they're raising money, and that, you know, I'll be bringing it over there, and they'll be able to see what difference, you know, their coins can make, the huge difference that it can make. So hopefully that's something that they'll keep with them, you know, forever, hopefully, and that it'll continue on, that it might make some bit of a difference in people's attitudes as they get older.
I think it helps also not to be judgmental or prejudiced, you know, in understanding the situational issues we can say Africa, or specifically here in this case, you know, the Zambian situation. Because unless a person knows what is has encountered the people of Zambia, and knows the situation, the socio-economical issues or problems people have, then it becomes better, much better to know and to understand what they are going through. Yeah, I think that's what I would say. You know, it's good that they come out and come across the situations here, you know, than just reading from books or watching, you know, on television.
The world we live in seems big, but it's small. It's small in the sense that technology, is increasing from one level to another. And those children in Ireland, at one time or the other, they will be in their place, in their position to move around the world. So if they are not taught anything pertaining to the country where their teachers have visited at one time or the other, and they'll move there blinded without knowing what is there. So as I've said, the world being small, we should know, I must know what is in America. Even if I've not gone there, I should know the wealth life of the people in Ireland, even if I've not been there. So that if an opportunity comes for me to be in Ireland, all right, I would definitely not be surprised. I won't be caught unaware, but I'll actually know that, oh, this is what I heard, this is what I read, this is what I was told. So it's, I would actually love the teachers, as they go back to Ireland, having experienced Zambia, they must teach that to their children. It's not, although it may not be within the curriculum of that country, but you see, knowledge is dynamic. We should know a lot of things.
Well, there was a time many years ago when I would have been very worried about that, because there was a very small group of maybe two or three people here who were seriously engaged with Africa. And when you're involved in any kind of long-term idealistic program of the type that I've been describing to you, you have to worry about its sustainability. What I see now is that we've really cracked the critical mass that you need to ensure that something like that becomes sustainable. I find it very hard. I don't think it depends on me or any other individuals at this stage. I would find it very hard to imagine a Mary Mackler College that wasn't engaging in activity with a focus on social justice, equity in society, the kind of things that are spoken about of in our mission statement, and that we are very engaged with locally in our work with disadvantaged communities, but that now we are similarly engaged with globally in our work on global development. And I think both of those are two sides of the same coin. And I think we have learned the extent to which the work which we do locally in educational disadvantage actually can inform and contribute to the work that we're doing in Africa as well. So I think there's a very happy coincidence. Also, I find now a very large number of our staff have made that their preferred area of research. It's an area that they're actively researching in. They've built, I think, some of the links and are continuing to build the links for engagement on a partnership basis where they, along with African counterparts, are engaging in that research. And I think that that really solidifies the work that we're doing and helps to ensure, insofar as one can ever be certain, because to a large extent this will always depend on the availability of resources, but insofar as you can be sure, I think we can be very confident that this is a work that will continue into the future. And given that this college has a real focus on making a difference, I think this is an area in which we can really make a difference.
I hope to go back to Zambia. One of the things that I certainly want to see, I want to see these classrooms that I've been speaking about it, I'd like to see those completed and visit the kids inside in them. I've met a lot of very good friends in Choma in Zambia. I definitely will go back. Whether I won't probably be able to go with the students because I'm retired, so somebody else will take my place there and probably do it much better than I've ever done it anyway, because that's the way things go. I will go back and hopefully I will see the results of what we have set out to do.
Word FM would like to thank all involved in the making of this series. Limerick to Lusaka was produced by Ciarán Ryan for Word FM and was funded by the Broadcasting Commission of Ireland's Sound and Vision Funding Scheme.